Hey, good evening everyone. Welcome to this meeting of the City of Sydney Local Planning Panel. I'm Richard Pearson and I'm the chairman of this panel. But before I start, I would like to acknowledge we're meeting on the land of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. I pay my respects to their elders past and present. The Local Planning Panel also acknowledges the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders people who currently reside within this area. The meeting today is to consider the development applications listed on the agenda. The panel today is myself, as I've said, Richard Pearson, Independent Chair. I've got also Peter Romey and Sean Carter as the Independent Expert members and Amelia Thorpe as Community Representative. Welcome everyone here tonight. Please be assured we will be making our decisions on the planning merits of each application, following consideration of views expressed in submissions and by people who address the panel tonight. Determinations and any decision of the panel shall be by a majority of votes of members present at the meeting. If votes are tied, the chair will have the casting vote. As an important transparency measure, the reasons for our decision are recorded in the minutes as part of the decision. If the panel goes against or amends the officer's recommendation, we will state the reasons for that. So the format tonight is that the Manager of Planning Assessments will provide an overview of each development application as they are considered, key issues raised and the recommendation of Council staff. We will then hear from members of the public who have registered to speak, followed by the applicant and or the applicant's representative who may like to address issues raised by members of the public. Please note there is a 3-minute time limit for each speaker with a warning bell at 2 minutes. I would ask that each speaker be heard in silence while they're addressing the panel and courtesy and respect be observed throughout the meeting. Please ensure no personal criticism is directed at any speaker or council staff, which would be contrary to the panel's code of conduct and would not be accepted by the panel. The panel may ask questions of speakers to clarify our understanding of what is being said. If you have registered to speak, your address to the panel will be recorded. All the public meetings of the panel are recorded and the recordings are available on the City's website. Please note there is no other recording or filming of this meeting other than the official record by Council. So after hearing from speakers, the panel will consider and make its decision on each application. This may involve, in rare occasions, adjourning the meeting to confer among ourselves before reconvening to make our decision, or we might make the decision without the need to adjourn. If we do consider more information is required before making a decision, we may defer the decision for consideration at a later date. That's essentially the format for tonight. I move to item one, which is disclosures of interest. And on this occasion, no members have disclosed any pecuniary or non-pecuniary interest in any matter on the agenda for this meeting of the Local Planning Panel. And in accordance with section 4.10, of the Code of Conduct for Local Planning Panels, each panel member has signed a declaration of interest declaring they have no conflict in relation to any matters on the agenda. Item 2 is confirmation of minutes that was chaired by Stephen Lehman, not myself, but I note that he has endorsed those minutes and the panel is noting those minutes as being endorsed by the Chair of the 1st of August 2018 panel meeting. Which now brings us to item 3, the development application for 67 to 69 Murray Street, Piermont. I do have some speakers on this item, maybe not all present at the moment, but I will call Carlton Nordling, if you could move forward, please, and address the panel. Thanks, Carlton. If you just press the button, Carlton, and...
I did. Oh, thank you, Chairman. Briefly, my position standing is I'm owner and occupier of Unit 114, which faces north over Bath Street and directly opposite the proposed Thornton site. The request, or the submission I'd like to make to the panel, is to include a condition limiting the height of the landscaping on the western side to not exceed the height of the parapet, so as to facilitate view sharing from my unit from the upper level of my two-storey or two-level unit. My unit enjoys significant active water views of the near and distant harbour in North Sydney from the upper bedroom level 11, which will be severely impacted by the proposed development. and figure 20 on page 38 of the material will show you the view. I have another photograph here to amplify that. Top of the parapet is approximately at chest and neck level when standing and looking out from level 11. It would be possible to retain a part of the distant view if landscaping does not exceed the height of the parapet, in my view, as an approximation. I believe it's reasonable that the applicant accommodate view sharing, notwithstanding that the application is assessed to be reasonable, and I would observe that it does not appear to be an attempt to accommodate view sharing to unit 114, at least the way I've seen that. So again, my request is to limit the height of landscaping to not exceed the height of the parapet to facilitate view sharing of the distant view. If the panel is willing, I have just some photographs with an approximation to show the impact and what I'm looking to preserve, if you're open to that.
You can hand those around if you like. Yep. And look, I apologise, I didn't go to Bill Mackay to do an overview of the development application, mea culpa. He will do that after we conclude this presentation.
Chairman. What I've given you is a photo of the view as it is now with a red ellipse showing the subject area or the view area that I'm seeking to preserve some access to. On page 2 of the materials, I've prepared an approximation, and I stress an approximation, of what I think the view would be and the impact of the proposed development and what I'm seeking to retain. I've put some wording in there which would show what that looks like. It's the view to the northwestern side, and I've given a night photograph and a day photograph which both show the same image. Are there any questions or any?
Let me just put that to the panel. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Norton? No. No, thanks. That's clear. Thanks, Carlton.
Thank you for your time and attention.
So what I'm now going to do is, as I should have done in the first instance, I'm going to ask Bill Mackay to just briefly run through the application so we're all on the same page. And following that, I'll ask Dean Wall to present to the panel.
Thank you, Charles. So this is an application for an 8-storey building containing a ground floor retail tenancy with 7 apartments above. There's basement car parking via a car stacker system accessed off the laneway, and at the top of the building there's some roof terraces. The application is recommended for approval subject to conditions. The application has been notified twice. It's been substantially amended from the original scheme. First in October and November 2017, and then again in June of this year. 1,108 owners and occupiers were notified. 7 submissions were received in relation to the original proposal and 4 submissions in relation to the amended proposal. The submissions related to the loss of the existing building, the height of the building and its impact on the character of the area, overshadowing, loss of privacy, view loss, and traffic and construction impacts. So this is the site shown in red, and the submissions come from the properties, the residential properties to the south on the opposite side of Bun Street, and also the hotel development to the east. So this is the existing building on the heights on the corner of Murray Street and Bun Street. This is a view of the Murray Street complex looking south. This is a view looking along a view from Bun Street, looking down Harwood Lane, and it's the opposite side of Harwood Lane, and this is the building on the south side of Bun Street, number 1-29 Bun Street. It's a basement floor plan showing the car parking. The ground floor plan, site levels fall away quite sharply from the west to the east, so at ground level On Murray Street you have a retail tenancy, and in the back of the house and the car stacker arrangement is essentially underground at that point. Level one is sort of ground level at Harworth Lane level, first floor at Murray Street. This is where you have the access to the residential apartments. There's one apartment per floor. On level one you have a two-bedroom apartment. The apartments above are all three-bedroom apartments, level two, levels three to five, level six, level seven, and then the rooftop. The design of the rooftop currently has a communal open space of approximately 40 square meters and a private open space serving the apartment below of a similar size. So Murray Street, elevation, Harwood Lane, and Bun Street, a section through the building. So it's built to the street alignment on Murray Street for the first six levels. The top two levels are then set back. On Harwood Lane, it's built to the street on a single-story level, and then the levels above are all set back. This is a photo montage of the amended proposal, and that was the original proposal. So we've gone from a predominantly glazed building to a building with a masonry character. Just some details of the architectural detailing of the facade. In terms of compliance with the development standards, the building has a maximum height of 28.75 metres, which is below the 30-metre height control. It has a floor space ratio of 4 to 1, which complies with the maximum floor space ratio for the site. There are controls in the site that in the LEP that require a development control plan and a competitive process for a building that exceeds 25 metres in height. So this building goes above that threshold. But within those controls, there is the ability for that requirement to be waived. And in this instance, we're supporting the waiver of the requirement for DCB and a competitive process. The elements of the building going over 25 metres just being those elements providing access to the rooftop open space. So in terms of the DCP, there's a height and storage control of 8 stories. It complies with that. The street frontage height control of 6 stories to Murray Street, the development complies. In terms of the ADG, the development complies with solar access to the living rooms, but there is a shortfall or non-compliance with solar access to the private open space. The site is particularly constrained given it's on the south end of a block with a predominantly southerly aspect. It complies with cross ventilation. 100% of apartments comply with that control. It doesn't comply with deep soil planting control. In terms of building separation, there's partial compliance. The lower levels of the building comply in terms of separation across Harwood Lane. And then from level 5 upwards, the ADG would normally seek an 18-metre separation with a 13.35 metre separation. And that in part is supposed to be addressed by conditions of consent, seeking the provision of some privacy treatment to that elevation. The apartment site has all complied with the minimum requirements in the control. Complies with the minimum floor ceiling height, and there is a non-compliance with the communal open space requirement of the rooftop. You currently have a communal terrace, which is about half the size of the requirement, and a private terrace. The recommendation proposes that those two terraces be combined into one compliant communal open space. So the issues are essentially a requirement for a DCP competitive design process, the non-compliance of communal open space, building separation, solar access, and the issue raised by the submitter, view loss. In terms of the DCP and the competitive design process, that's required because a building is over 25 metres in height. The exceedance, or the part of the building above that, is relatively minor. It's rooftop open space, lift and stair access. And bear in mind, the whole of the building is still under the maximum 30-metre height control. The applicant's not seeking any additional height or floor space. That could be sought if you go through that process. And the waiver supported in this instance with the DCP competitive process is considered to be unreasonable and unnecessary. So this section just shows a section of the building that a red dotted line shows the 25 metre height limit, that being the threshold for both the DCP and the competitive process. In total of communal open space, the ADT requires 25% of the site area, 72.5 square metres of communal open space. 40 square metres is proposed as a condition, as I mentioned, to combine both a private and communal open space on the rooftop, which could provide for a communal open space for approximately 80 square metres. The condition also requires the redesign of the level 7 apartment below to provide a private open space in a similar fashion to the other apartments within the building. There's just a plan of the communal open space, which is shown in red, and the private open space. The condition seeks the redesign of that to provide for one communal space. This is a floor plan of the apartment below, showing how the private balcony or open space could be provided consistent with the other apartments in the development. In terms of building separation, there's a 13.35 metre separation to the rear of the site across Harwood Lane. At the upper levels of the building, the ADG forms an 18 metre separation. To address potential privacy impacts of the condition, requiring some privacy screening to be provided on that elevation. In terms of solar access, the development partly complies with the requirement. It meets the minimum area requirement for solar access to the living areas, and that's about midwinter, and that's gained by the afternoon sun from the west. Given that the private open space is on the eastern side of the development, it doesn't meet the requirement for sun access to the private open space. Supported in this instance, if they were to comply with that provision for sun access to private open spaces would need to be moved to the other side of the building, and there'd be potential for increased impacts to the building on the opposite side of Harwood Lane. In terms of due loss, the application has been amended quite significantly since it was originally submitted. Impacts on views have been reduced between the original scheme and the proposed scheme, although the development will have an impact on views from apartments to the south. There are partial water views to lot to apartment 114, where the submitter lives. And the impact on views has been assessed as being acceptable due to compliance with the height floor space setbacks and lack of a reasonable design alternative to address those impacts. So this apartment 114 in onto 29 Bond Street on the opposite side of Bond Street from the development. The apartment is on the upper level, upper part of the building. It's a two-level apartment with the living areas at the lower level and bedrooms above. These are some photographs from level 10 within that apartment, from the living area across the terrace, and then from the terrace at the lower level of the apartment. So you can see the views across the site, and this is the view from the upper level bedroom. These are views from the communal roof terrace within that building, which is also to the side of apartment 114, so it's a similar sort of aspect. And the next set of slides show the potential impact of the development on the views from the communal terrace. We don't have the same analysis from the apartment, which is next door, but it's a similar sort of impact. So this first slide shows the original proposed built form, which is the yellow shaded area, in the context of the notional building envelope that's set by the controls. So the original building sort of fell outside of that built form set by the controls. The application has been amended, and this is the new built form, which is within those controls and is also slightly less than the original built form. So the blue, light blue shaded area represents the impact of the proposed building, and the lighter white shaded area is a notional built form, building envelope set by the controls. So you can see there has been an improvement in terms of view loss, but clearly the building will still impact on views from the building to the sink. So the application is recommended for approval and is recommended that the requirement for a DCP and a competitive design process be waived in this instance. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. So what I'll do now, I'll ask Mr. Glenn Wall, if present, to come and address the panel. And Glenn, you won't hear at the start, so you won't hear at the start, so 3 minutes, then we'll give you a bell at two. Yep.
Right. What I'm concerned about is that apparently this committee has failed to take on board the council resolution of 2013-14 for all sandstone to be blocked out across the City of Sydney's local government area. Currently in Pyrmont we have three building sites. One, we have 1,600 1 metre by 2 metre by 1 metre deep blocks of yellow block extracted. I shepherded through that DA to ensure that the yellow block was extracted and not hammered into rubbish. Currently there is a block in Mount and Bowman Street, Miller Street, where apparently the developer is putting dodgy core sampling. Now these core samples showed that there was no yellow block, but as soon as the building was demolished it became extremely apparent that half the block was yellow block down to about 2 metres deep. This has since been destroyed and smashed into small pieces. They're currently into another line of yellow block underneath this concrete slab, smashing that up as well. What I'd like this committee to do, and this site, as we know there is yellow block all over Pyrmont, is to ensure that the excavations are blocked out and make a... and I can't reinforce that this was part of the Stone Committee recommendations to Council, which Council did accept, that we transition developers into blocking out as opposed to using rock hammers as a means of excavation in sandstone. The idea it was, and is, that they became used to blocking out as opposed to just hammering it. There's two reasons why. One is to save whatever stone there is, because there's a statewide and Australia-wide shortage of sandstone. Particularly yellow block, we couldn't find any for this building when this building was renovated. The other one is, it cuts down on vibrations, noise and dust. By using the cutting wheels, it doesn't disturb the neighbours near as much as rock hammers, which currently I'm being woken up every morning at start. As soon as they get the flag, the rock hammers start, my whole building vibrates. Whereas the other site down the road, nobody had any problems with vibrations. There were minor complaints about dust, but they used a snow maker to suppress the dust, and everyone in the street's very happy with the site. Whereas the other site, they're just being driven up the wall with rock hammering, and it's just totally wrong that sandstone's being destroyed when it's in such short supply, because you get little pockets of it here, there and everywhere. So please, ensure that regardless of the GO fees, that there's blocked out. And I'd also ask Council to also request the State Government save whatever yellow block is in the excavation for the 60-foot tower they propose, because we know there is a huge seam of yellow block where that proposal is also. Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn. So, yes, Mr. Roney has a question, I think. Yep.
Glenn is this? Okay. Have you seen the proposed conditions of consent? Okay. The condition number 40 for this development requires, in the first instance, a geotech report to assess the quality of the rock, of the stone, and then it goes on that it, to say it required some suitable quality for reuse, that there has to be a work method statement and which sets out methodologies for removal in blocks of the stone.
So, Glenn, we just need to wrap up. Like, your point's really well made. Yeah. So the point's really well made, Glenn. What I'll do, so thanks very much, I'll ask Mr. Yarns, who's the Director of Planning, to raise that specific issue you've raised and also the view loss issue raised by the previous speaker. So thanks very much. If you could return to the gallery, and I will ask Mr. Yarns to respond to those two issues, and particularly the condition that's recommended in this case, and also the condition in relation to landscaping.
So the first speaker requested consideration that the roof not have trees or landscaping above the parapet, and for your consideration, and this is a useful photograph which is similar to the one we have, about half the site affects that view where the red ellipse is formed, which is corresponds to the location of the dwelling that does not have an outlook on two sides. And if you refer to the plan of the tower on page, say, 102, it really corresponds to the roof area, which is west of the lift overrun. So because the upper levels are reduced in size compared to the lower levels, the zone to the west of that lift overrun is the zone which interferes with the circle's outlook on this. And it may be possible that that zone to the left be constrained in terms of two things, the screening of the plant equipment, and rather than purchasing vertical mounted AC condensers that could be the low level ones, which are more ventilate through the top. And that portion to the west could be constrained for landscaping to be to the height of the parapet, leaving the eastern section, which more or less goes out of his view line, to be landscaped. And so if there was an appetite to consider that, it would be possible on clause 2, condition 2, on page 50, to make a note under 2H that the screens required for the plant area are not to be higher than the parapet. And that would address the scale of the screens on that side of the building. And an eye could be added that the rooftop structures or landscaping is not to exceed the parapet height for the area to the west of the lift. Yeah, western face of the lift. Leaving the lift intact, but just for that portion which is potentially interfering. So that would be a way of giving effect to a condition which I don't think would be particularly onerous for the applicant, although they may wish to speak to it. But it would give effect to the objective concerns about that portion of the development, which...
So I think that's a fair point that we should hear from the applicant in relation to this issue, but I appreciate that constructive suggestion. Did you just want to, before the applicant speaks, because I think they are registered to speak, they are, to raise the sandstone issue as well?
So we are aware of the value of sandstone extraction where a suitable site is found. Not all sites are equal, and on some sites, a portion of the site doesn't have the compressive strength that we require, or is broken up with veining or fissures, but other parts of the same site has got firm, solid, high compressive sandstone. A good example is the TWT site on Harris Street, which is a significant excavation. I'm sure that Mr. Wall would be aware of that site. And I've walked through the base of that site following the completion of the sandstone soaring. It does, I must say, it is a much friendlier removal process to surrounding development due to the fact that strati soaring, which is effectively a wet soaring process, has got reduced vibration and noise. But there's no doubt that it adds time to the excavation process. In the case of TWT site, it added 12 months. But it was a significant amount of sandstone, and there was a recovery value for it. So I'm all in support of the kind of issues when war is raising. And we captured that in the EY site at Circular Quay, between George and Pitt, and we've also captured that on the Lend Lease site, which has got considerable excavation for basement parking. So, in the case of this development, we've got a condition 40. The material, we just have to be vigilant in receiving the geotech material, in receiving the excavation method statement. I think we're on reasonably high alert on those matters. I believe the condition is the right condition. It's just we have to be careful that the applicant's submission to that condition is a fair representation of material.
Okay, thanks very much, Graham. So what I'll do, it's either Charles Peters or Ned O'Neill, speaking on behalf of the applicant, maybe both of you if you like, and it would be good if you could respond to those two specific issues that have been raised from the gallery tonight.
Yeah, thanks. So I'm Charles Peters from SJV Architects, Ned O'Neill. Yeah, I think we agree with what Graham is saying on both those points. Certainly with the roof, if it will become communal open space as recommended with the conditions of consent, we think we can achieve that lowering of the landscaping without impacting balustrade heights. No issues with the restrictions of any elevated element to the west. The element to the east provides weather protection to the lift, which is important, but no impact to the west. Regarding the sandstone, we have come up against that condition on other sites. This is a very small site, but in the same sense, chances are we'll be looking for a saw cut approach anyway because it's such a confined site, and we'll be using that as our way of creating that power stack or excavation. So I doubt the means of excavation will be an issue. The extraction of the rock obviously gets harder with a smaller site, so I'm not an expert in that side of construction, so I can't comment on that. But certainly I think the condition provides enough flexibility for us to deal with that, and I don't see any issue from your point of view in terms of carrying that out in accordance with that condition.
Yeah, we, as I think previously been raised, we note that obviously that geotechnical report has to be provided to council, so that's obviously a process that we would go through. And then, yeah, depending on the outcome of that, and as for those changes to H and possibly the addition of I, we see no reason why that couldn't be put in. We think that's a good outcome. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Let's go back to Graham.
In that case, the recommendation would be in H, where it says the rooftop plan area is to be screened on all sides. It would be changed to screened on exposed sides instead of all. There would be an extra sentence out at the end of the condition H that the screening is not to be higher than the parapet. And what that would mean to be effective is that the remote condensers need to be the square low set ones rather than the vertical.
Yeah. Okay.
And then a condition I reads the rooftop structures and landscaping is not to exceed the parapet height for the area west of the lift overrun western wall.
Charles, just a quick question. On your ground floor plan, where you have that lovely little carve out where you have an entry, and you come just, Bill, if you could just pop down one more level, you can see that this lift looks like it's designed to have a double door. I suspect there's a double door there. It's just important, I think, when you come into the entry, you see the lift door in front of you rather than walking all the way around to the comms room. I suspect it's there. It could be just a... On the, just there.
Oh, okay.
It looks like it should be there. It just might have just fallen off.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you can just show on that side, I think it'd be good to see the lift door as you walk in. Great. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah. Any other questions for the applicant? Don't think so. Thanks very much for that. So where we're at now is the Graham has proposed an amendment to condition 2 in relation to the landscaping issue, which I'm happy with. I get no dissent from other panel members, so we're okay with that. In relation to the sandstone recycling issue, Glenn, I think there is a condition there that gets to what you're seeking to achieve. It will be down, and the applicant has confirmed that the construction method that they're proposing would be amenable to recovery of the result, so it gets down to the geotechnical report, I think, which is Jan said, and I would reiterate that Council obviously carefully scrutinised that report, and if at all possible, that resource be salvaged and used constructively. So I think it's a great point you make, but I don't think we need to do anything different to condition 40. I think it does what you're seeking. It just requires the geotech report to be thoroughly scrutinised by Council as part of the process. So with the amendment to condition 2, I'm happy to propose that we adopt the recommendation. All in favour? Aye. No one against? Okay, so that's adopted, and I thank the speakers very much for their participation, both the applicant and the objectors, and thank the staff for their work on that application. So thank you very much. We now move to item 4, which is the development application for 1 to 17 Euston Road, Alexandria. I'm going to ask Bill to give us a rundown on the application before I invite any speakers.
This is an application for a four-storey mixed-use development. It has two basement levels of car parking, two ground-level commercial tenancies, and 27 apartments. There's a landscape setback to Euston Road, and it is also subject to a planning agreement for footpath widening to Euston Lane. The application is recommended for deferred commencement approval. The application has been substantially modified since the original submission. It's been notified twice, first in October and November 2017, and then again in June and July of this year. 218 owners and occupiers were notified. 29 submissions were received in relation to the first proposal, 12 submissions in relation to the amended proposal. The submissions related to excessive height, the bulk and scale of the development, and the original proposal was considerably higher than the current proposal. Traffic and parking impacts, inappropriate setbacks in communal space, amenity impacts including privacy and overshadowing, heritage impacts and impacts from excavation of the site. This is the site shown in red, and the premises from which submissions were received are shown in blue. So it's on predominantly residential premises in the immediate vicinity of the site, including the properties immediately opposite, on the opposite side of the laneway and to the north of the development. This is the existing building of the site on Euston Road. The site is subject to two zonings, so the front portion of the site adjacent to Euston Road is subject to an SP2 zoning, which is essentially land being reserved for road widening. So no physical buildings are allowed on that site. The proposal just proposes at this point in time a landscape setback, and at some point in the future, in due course, that may be resumed for road widening. And then the remaining portion of the site is a B4 use. The development is permissible with consent. This is the existing building on the site, which is to be demolished. On the opposite side of Euston Road, you have the Bunnings development. To the south, you have some existing commercial industrial type buildings and some new residential development. To the north, you have the Pet Barn commercial building. It's the Euston Lane frontage. The opposite side of Euston Lane, you have the rear of a terrace house residential development. So in terms of the plans of the development, this is basement level 2. It shows the SP2 zone land fronting Euston Road. Basement level 1, access to the basement is from Euston Lane along the south boundary of the site. The ground floor plan, so you have that landscape setback to Euston Road, two commercial tenancies. On the ground level in Euston Lane, you have some residential apartments. And then at the upper levels, you have apartments, which all have an aspect to the laneway. Most of the apartments are through apartments. There has dual aspects of the laneway in Euston Road, and then there's a couple of single aspects of apartments at this level. And then on the roof level, you have the communal open space. This is the Euston Road elevation, Euston Lane and Harley Street, the west elevation on the boundary, section through the development, and a photo montage of the building to Euston Road, and an illustration of the building viewed from Harley Street and Euston Lane. So in terms of compliance with the controls, it's a non-compliance with the height limit. The height limit is 15 metres. The maximum height of the building is 18.25 metres. The non-compliant portion of the building relates to structures providing access to the rooftop communal space. So the leftover around stair access, some solar chimneys, and pergolas to the open space. It complies with the maximum floor space ratio. The floor space ratio 2.4 to 1 complies with the maximum parking for the site. In terms of cross ventilation, it complies. Those figures on the table are incorrect. It should say 60%, where it says 67%, where it says 70%, but it complies with the control. It complies with the solar access provisions. And there's a slight non-compliance, about 20 square metres in relation to the communal open space. There's also a small non-compliance with the deep soil planting on the site. There's deep soil planting along Euston Lane. Obviously, there's a landscape setback to the front of the site, which is being taken out of the calculations. So at some point in the future, that would be resumed for road widening. So in terms of building separation, it complies with the minimum requirements. It, for the most part, complies with the minimum floor to ceiling height. So a small non-compliance complies with apartment depth. There's a four-story control in the DCP, which it complies with. The original proposal was four higher. It complies with the floor-to-floor height, with a small non-compliance. It complies with apartment mix. So the issue is essentially the non-compliance with the building height. The design of the building and how it deals with the noise from Euston Road while still providing for adequate natural ventilation, that was a significant problem in the original scheme, which has been resolved in the amended scheme with use of plenums and solar chimneys. Communal open space, a small shortfall, deep floor planning, small shortfall, and the site subject to a voluntary planning agreement. Which is the main reason for the deferred commencement recommendation of the proposal. So the building height is exceeded by 3.25 metres. Non-compliance relates to lift overruns, stair lift access to the roof, pergolas, ventilation chimneys, and the 4.6 is supported. The components of the building that over the height limit are not considered to have significant adverse impacts on surrounding development. So this is a section through the building. Red dotted line shows the height limit and the extent of non-compliance. In terms of noise and natural ventilation, Euston Road is a very busy road. It's a classified road. So acoustic ventilation cleaners and chimneys are proposed within the design to provide for passive natural ventilation to those bedrooms that have frontage to Euston Road. That design has been peer reviewed by an external consultant and they consider it to be acceptable, subject to the finding child being resolved, which is addressed by conditions of consent. So this is a section through the building that gives an idea of how that ventilation and chimney arrangement would work. In terms of communal open space, 250 square metres of rooftop communal open space is proposed. Supposed to be 25% of site area, that's 23% of the site area, small non-compliance, about 20 square metres. The non-compliance is considered minor in this instance, and the design of the communal open space and facilities are considered acceptable, subject to the conditions relating to the details of landscaping. In terms of deep soil, there's a deep soil zone provided in the setback on Euston Lane. It equates to 4% of the site area, as opposed to 7% is the control. This site is constrained by the fact that a good portion of the site is reserved by that SP2 zone, which obviously limits the ability to provide ground level deep soil planting. So that one compliance is, there are conditions requiring it to be improved, but the need for a full compliance with the control is not considered necessary in this instance. So conditions requiring an additional area of deep soil to Euston Lane, the landscape planters to the Euston Lane elevation of the building, and some tree plantings along Euston Lane. In terms of the voluntary planning agreement for Euston Lane, that requires land to be dedicated to council as a widened footpath. The strip of land is for the full length of the site on the laneway, 650 millimetres wide. It's a narrow strip. The BPA for that dedication is currently, or the legal documents currently being finalised, so that needs to go on to exhibition. So the condition of consent, proposing a deferred commencement consent, requiring that BPA to be put on exhibition, executed, and on the title of the premises of the site before the consent becomes operative. In terms of the deferred commencement conditions, the design modifications that have been referred to are also required to be submitted prior to the consent becoming operative. The application is recommended for a deferred commencement approval.
Thank you, Bill. I've got a couple of people registered on behalf of the applicant to speak. Is there anybody else here who wanted to address item 4? No? Okay. So Matt Carlisle and or Greg Boston, if you want to address the panel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Greg Boston, consultant planner on behalf of the applicant. We're obviously pleased with the report and the recommendation. I think it represents a protracted period of negotiation with council staff to address a number of issues. As you've heard, there are draft conditions going towards addressing some relatively minor residual issues. We don't raise any objection to those conditions as drafted, and therefore ask that you endorse the conditions as written. Ordinarily, I'd come along to respond to any objector issues. Obviously, we don't have that issue tonight. But what I would say is that the application does rely on that 4.6 variation in regards to building height. It's a statutory threshold. If the panel members have any issues or concerns at all about that particular document, then please direct any questions to me now. If not, then from a planning perspective, I simply ask that you endorse the recommendation in totality before you this evening. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I think just a few points I'd like to just point out to the panel. The non-compliance of the height, we have as Bill has already mentioned, it really just relates to stair and lift access to the roof terrace to provide equitable access if it's available to the roof terrace. We've located those elements towards the front of the building so that they're the furthest away from the residential zoning to Euston Lane, so they won't be really, shouldn't be noticeable really from the street scope or from the residential area from street level. The shortfall in deep soil landscaping is partly due to the land dedication to council at the rear lane, where the owner has dedicated land at the back, I think 29 or 30 square metres, to council to widen the footpath without asking for any planning gain, but that some of the landscaping has been reduced because of that, but we're happy to address the conditions, adding landscaping to the building itself and work with council on that. We've taken the neighbours' objections on board, particularly regarding visual privacy to the building. I think the neighbours behind in the conservation area behind Eastern Lane had some issues. We have provided screening to the balconies on facing Eastern Lane, to all balconies. These are adjustable sliding screens which will be permanent, movable but permanently there, so I'll always be screening to the rear. The windows to the living rooms at Eastern Lane are, I think, 12 or 13 metres from the nearest window opposite, and we note that the building opposite on the laneway has no setback at all, so, and there's just some floor slot windows to bedrooms, I understand. But we have distanced the building as far away from those windows as possible, greater than the CEP 65 ADG requirements. And furthermore, with the detour landscaping at the Eastern Lane area, we're proposing quite large trees as well. So there'll be landscape planting all the way along the Eastern Lane, which will protect privacy and overlooking from our building to the buildings behind. And furthermore, the roof terrace, we've made a concerted effort to pull the roof terrace walls inboard of the building by over 3 metres at the roof, particularly facing the laneway again, and provided quite a large amount of landscaping and a planter up there which will further screen views from the roof terrace looking down over the residential zones in the rear. And there's no way of looking directly down because the terrace is pulled back so far from the edge. So we have been very, very careful and working very closely with council to minimise any issues for neighbours.
Thank you. So any questions from the panel of the applicant's representatives? Don't think so. Thank you very much for that presentation. Were there any other issues panel members would like to raise at this point? Or does Mr. Yarn want to make a comment?
Thank you. Through you, Chair. Just on the issue as raised about the landscaping and the trees down the lane, we do have to strike a balance between solar access in winter particularly and the privacy management. And so I would suggest that if you're agreeable, that on condition 82, page 96, part B, 5, it says a minimum of 2 trees shall be provided to each terrace area. We might insert 2 deciduous trees. That is not in conflict with the other condition, which is advanced tree planting, which is further on in this draft conditions of consent. And there is a requirement for anyone developing land and excavating the site to alert the heritage office if they discover any form of archaeological effects. And it may be useful for us to include a standard condition, which is just archaeological discovery during excavations, just an advisory condition, really, of a state requirement, to add it as condition 52, as the first condition of Schedule B on page 85, and then just renumber the conditions after that, 53 and so on accordingly. That condition is just a standard condition. In fact, it appears in item 3, the Murray Street Piermont project on page 62. And it's an archaeological discovery during excavation. It just tells you what to do. Should anything be discovered unexpectedly, Should any Indigenous Aboriginal objects be unexpectedly discovered? Should an archaeological remains be discovered? And so on. So that's a condition with part A, B, C, D to replicate condition 38 of item 3.
Did panel any comments on those proposed amendments or any other issues?
Just in regard to that archaeological condition, it doesn't require you to do anything other than what you would be required to do under the state legislation for archaeology. So it doesn't impose any additional condition that isn't already there. What it actually does is just bring to your attention your obligations under that legislation in New South Wales.
Thank you.
With those changes proposed by Mr. Yarn, I'm happy to move that we put the recommendation to approve this development application. All in favour say aye. Against, declare it carried unanimously. Thank you very much. Speakers and staff for that. So we move to item 5, which is development application 32 to 38 Flinders Street, Darlinghurst, and I'll hand over to Bill.
So this is an application for the construction of two residential units at the roof level of an existing building and the provision of a terrace above an existing storeroom at the podium level. The application is recommended for approval subject to conditions. The application was notified in December of last year to January of this year. 46 owners and occupiers were notified. No submissions were received. This is a site that has frontage to Flinders Street and also to the corner of Taylor Street and Chisholm Street to the rear. This is the existing building that's viewed from Flinders Street. It's currently set back from Flinders Street. And this is the view of the building from the rear from Taylor Street. And the addition at the top is on this rear portion of the building. This is a view looking north along Chisholm Street. And this is a view looking south down Chisholm Street from the rooftop of the existing building. So this is a podium level floor plan. And then the sixth floor plan where the two new apartments are proposed. Roof plan, this is the west elevation to Flinders Street. The setback substantially from Flinders Street, so you won't be able to see it from Flinders Street. And then the view from the rear from Chisholm Street. This is the south elevation. And this is a section of the development and the red dotted line shows the 15-metre height limit for the existing buildings over the height limit, and the addition of the two apartments on top is a further non-compliance. So in terms of the controls, there's a non-compliance with height. The height limit's 15 metres. The existing building already exceeds that. The maximum height of the proposed development would be 20.8 metres. In terms of floor space ratio, the development would be still comfortably within the maximum 2.5 to 1 floor space for the site. In terms of DCP controls, there's a four-storey height control. The existing building, it's already over that. This will be an additional level, so there's a non-compliance there, although the presentation of the building to Flinders Street will effectively remain unchanged. Private open space, the development complies with the two new apartments comply with the requirements. In terms of the ADG, it complies with solar access, cross vent, and building separation. The apartment sizes, there's non-compliance. One of the apartments is identified on the plans as a studio apartment that is designed as a one-bed apartment. So it's an undersized one-bedroom apartment. So the condition requiring that to be redesigned to a true studio apartment, and then it would be compliant. The other one-bed apartment complies with the minimum requirement. It complies with a minimum floor to ceiling height. The application was reviewed by the design advisory panel. They were generally supportive but had some concerns in relation to the detail of the development. These issues have been addressed in the amended plans and via conditions of consent. So the issues essentially are the non-compliance with the height limit. There is a 4.6 variation that's been sought. There aren't any significant amenity impacts resulting from the non-compliance. The new building will be comparable in scale to
neighbouring buildings, or the neighbouring building to the south, neighbouring building to the north, is much higher. Substantial setbacks from Flinders Street, so it's not going to be really visible from Flinders Street, and it's also setback from Chisholm Street. So the 4.6 variation is supported in this instance. The application is recommended for approval. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. So I only have the applicant registered to speak here, and that was to answer questions if required, I think. But we're very happy, George Elkhury, if you want to address the panel. Okay. Well, what I will ask is, does the panel have any questions of Mr. Elkhury or any observations they would like to make?
Mr. Curry, your architect isn't here, so much yet. There that connects the existing level 5 to the new additional level, and the way that it's actually documented, it shows the flight that arrives at the new level 6 is actually over the flight below that's running in the other direction. So we're not actually sure how the configuration of that stair is actually going to work. So we are of the view that we need to impose a condition on the consent that configuration be confirmed and resolved in the final approved drawing.
No. Okay, I've got no objection to what you're recommending. Currently that stair goes up to the roof for roof access there, so it's existing there as it is. So it's in operation, it works. What's happened is because the lift overrun is there, the flight of stairs is higher and that roof comes a bit higher, so there's headroom to get to the top there.
That may be so, but then I would think, suggest that the drawing doesn't actually reflect that situation, so it would need to be confirmed and resolved.
No objection to that.
George, just for the amenity of the apartments when you arrive at the top of the stairs, would you be able to explain to me that you get to the top of the stairs and there's a landing, then a door, you go through that door and then there's the doors to the apartment. Is that door necessary on that? Okay. So it'd be good if we could remove that. The second thing is, but moving into unit 14, that's a one bedder that's quite a large size. I think it'd be better, given such a tight circulation there, if we indent that door or set that door into that little corridor of unit 14, about the space of the door, about 900 to a metre, just so if two people arrive to both apartments at the same time, they're not standing back to back. There's a little...
Has somebody captured the amendments to the conditions? I might pass over to Mr. Yarn to summarise that. I think, George, we're happy with that. So if you would like to resume your seat in the gallery, thanks very much for answering the questions.
Thank you, Chair. Through you, the issues raised could be addressed in the following way: by adding a condition D to condition 2 on page 38, which reads, the alignment of the stair access between the 5th floor and the proposed 6th floor are to be resolved in plan and section. And a part E, bit 2E, the access door to unit 14 be recessed from the corridor by 1.5 metres to allow more circulation.
And then, in the remaining paragraph, the modifications and design details are to be submitted to replace Area Planning Manager with Director of City Planning.
So, panel members happy with that proposed coverage of the amendments? Okay. So, thank you. With that amendment, as just outlined by Mr. Yarn, I will move that we adopt the recommendation and approve this application. All in favour say aye. Against, we declare that carried unanimously. Thank you, Mr. El-Khoury, for attending and answering the questions. Okay, so brings me to item 6, development application 483 George Street, Sydney. I will pass the bill to briefly run through this application.
Thank you. So it's an application for the use of part of Sydney Square, outside Town Hall, for the Take Care Space and Ambassador Program. So the use would provide somewhere for young people to rest their feet, get rehydrated, charge their phones, get first aid, find transport home, or wait for friends. It's a temporary use that involves the erection of a temporary marquee measuring 3 metres by 6 metres. The proposed hours of operation are 9:30pm to 4am on Fridays and Saturdays. Australia Day Eve, Good Friday Eve, and Anzac Day Eve, and 9pm to 4am on New Year's Eve. The application is recommended for approval for temporary conditions. So it was notified in July, 418 owners and occupiers were notified, no submissions were received. So it's just the location of the use is just on that sort of George Street frontage to Sydney Square, so that gives a rough idea of where the marquee would be going. That's what the marquee would look like, so it's a temporary structure. Taken up and down fairly quickly every time it's used. In terms of controls, there's not really any specific controls that are directly relevant to the proposal. There's no floor space. Complies with a height control of 3 metres on Sydney Square, complies with that. There's overshadowing provisions taking place during the evening, that's not a problem. In terms of the DCP controls, the area is within a 24-hour late trading precinct. So the hours of operation are consistent with that. But the issues that have been identified, the development is on a state heritage site. It's not proposing any permanent structure or any physical alteration to the heritage fabric. It's got a heritage exemption from the heritage office. So heritage is not considered to be a significant problem. Antisocial behaviour and crime, that was an issue that was raised by the police. So they raised that as a concern, but support the proposal subject to conditions, requiring that the applicant obviously complies with a management plan that is submitted with the application and that they liaise with the police prior to operation. So that's covered off by conditions of consent. The application is recommended for approval.
Thank you, Bill. Any observations or comments, questions, panel members? No? No? Okay. I think it's a very worthwhile proposal. I'm happy to support it. So all in favour say aye. Aye. Carried unanimously. Thank you very much. Item 7, summary of applications to the local planning panel. I don't think we need any particular presentation on this. Thank you for the update. It's very useful for the panel to be kept appraised of what's in the system. Any comments from panel members? No? So I think we're just noting that report and all in favour say aye. No dissent. So thank you very much. I declare the meeting concluded. Thank you staff for attending and declare the meeting concluded. Thank you.